Shall I start again? Greetings and welcome to our travels in time. We'll be exploring together for the next 5 seminars. Time is an impossibly huge subject. I was kind of crazy to choose it, but I love this subject. I'm literally crazy about time. We ended our 10-week everyday Zen practice period last Saturday with a moving Shuso ceremony right here in this room, in which Neil, our Shuso, gave himself away to us with every one of his responses, lighting us all up with his bright compassion. Then Norman brought the practice period to a close. I may not be quoting him exactly, but he stood with his 8-foot staff in his hand and called out with great urgency, 70 days ago, this practice period began, and now it's ending. How did this happen? Where did the time go? Where is it now? And then he banged the staff 3 times on the floor, and the practice period was ended. Time is about as Buddhist a subject as you can get. As you probably know, the Buddha taught that all things are marked by 3 characteristics: impermanence, suffering, and no fixed self. Impermanence is time itself. Everything is constantly changing because time is constantly flowing. Impermanence is painful because of the losses that it includes and it necessitates. But impermanence is beautiful too. Impermanence is life being lived, life living itself. That's what we want, isn't it? That's what you want, to live your life? You can't do it unless you're impermanent. What kind of a life would you have if you were a granite statue that never moved or changed? Michelangelo's David never gets a hard-on. And I don't want to turn what I'm saying into just a rude joke. I really mean it, that I want to explore with you how this very impermanence, this time we breathe with every breath, is what makes it possible for us to feel joy and to love each other. So I'll say something about what's coming in the next seminars. Tonight, I'll introduce the subject and I'll talk a little about the history of time and how humans measure time. Next week, we'll look at Dogen's fascicle Uji, or being time. This is the essence of Buddhist teachings on time. You can't talk about time to Buddhists without talking about Uji. And we'll dive into deep time, non-linear time. We could easily take all 5 seminars for studying Uji and not be done, or more than that. But while I'm on the topic, I'll say that if you want to read the text, that would be maybe interesting to you, certainly not required, but that's the one text that I'll really suggest that you read during this time. And it's in Moon in the Dewdrop as Uji, the time being. And it's also in Kaz Ta-Nehisi's Shobogenzo, the Treasury of the True Dharma Eye. And it's fascicle number 12 there. But I'll also bring copies to the in-person people. And we'll have it on screen sharing, too. For the 3rd seminar, I invited our old friend Tom White to come and speak to us about time from the point of view of astronomy, astrophysics, cosmology, and quantum theory, and things like that. And in the last 2 seminars, we'll consider the present moment and body time, how it feels to be in time, how do we experience time. My talks will be impressionistic, collage-like, because that's how I think now, and that's how time is, too. Time doesn't go in a straight line, even though we sometimes think it does, and neither will I. In fact, now I have something to admit to you. I have to tell you that I wrote this talk without counting the words. I went blithely along, adding more and more interesting information about the history of time measurement, until I decided to look at the word count. And discovered, and I don't even want to tell you how recently this was, that it was more than twice as long as there is time for. Help, I said to myself, I don't have time to say all this stuff about time. I don't even have time to shorten the talk in a clear way. It seems I've completely lost control of time. So this is something that happens to me sometimes, and this is one of the reasons I like to talk about time. I need to explore it. So I've cut big chunks out of the talk, and I've left very fascinating chunks that you'll be so sad not to hear. And then I have left in some other chunks, and there will be missing transitions. And so I give you this talk as an object lesson on time. Also, each week, just for fun, I'm going to choose a Dharma phrase for our refrain. And this week, it's a quote from Hong Zhe, whose teachings we studied earlier this year in Cultivating the Empty Field. So here's our refrain for today. Each moment is astonishing radiance without direction or corners, discarding trifles. And I'd like to do it now as a call and response. So I'll say it in parts, and you all say it back to me. Each moment is astonishing radiance.
Each moment is astonishing radiance.
Without direction or corners.
Without direction or corners.
Discarding trifles.
Discarding trifles.
Time is a great mystery. It might be the great mystery. What is it? Is it animal, vegetable, or mineral? Is it solid, liquid, or gas? What is this moment? Whoops, it's already gone. Time is not a thing. You might say, I don't have enough time, but time is not something you possess. We speak of spending time and saving time, but time is not something you can save. You might think you can, by saving up your sick days at work, for example, or getting a much faster computer. But you're not saving time, you're just doing something different in the time that's given to you anyway. Time is like gravity or sunshine. You can't put it in the bank and use it later. You could say that time is the most important thing there is because it includes everything. It's sort of like God, if you believe in God. Can you think of anything that's not inside of time? I'm thinking about it more now these days because I'm 80, although I always used to think about it a lot. But 80, this seems extraordinary. A fellow old person said to me recently, I thought it would take longer to grow old. How did this come about? I shout like Norman, where did these 80 years go? Where are they now? Could time itself be the thief? But no. On the contrary, time has given me everything I've ever had, including my life. When I was in first grade, I learned to read. This was a big deal. Another part of the curriculum in first grade, which I remember vividly, was learning to tell time from the big wall clock over the blackboard. It was not as big a deal as reading, of course, but it was important. We didn't learn in an instant. We learned about the relationship between the hour hand and the minute hand. Notice the word hand, the hands of the clock. The hands cycled around a circle over and over. The half hour is deeply embedded in my brain as an image of the minute hand pointing down at the six. The hands moved at different speeds, the hour hand's movement imperceptible. The minute hand's movement imperceptible too, unless you were looking at a big wall clock when it jerked from 1 minute to the next. And the second hand, if there was one, as there was on the school clock, its speed was easy to see, sweeping around the circle like a broom. The clock on the classroom wall embodied time. The clock is a body with a face, with hands. It shows me the meaning of second, minute, hour, showing me the length of half a day on that circle, the meridian of noon at the top of the circle as it should be. What a different way of representing time than on an iPhone or any digital device that shows a series of numbers. I have an affection for analog watches. I feel like I can see time and see what time it is much better. My 10-year-old granddaughter, my expert consultant on electronic devices, asked me recently what time it was, and I said, 4:15. "What's quarter of?" she asked. Each moment is astonishing radiance. Without direction or corners. Discarding trifles. According to Buddhist teachings, time is beginningless and endless. Early Buddhist teachings refer to kalpas, which are very long periods of time, and ksanas, which are very short. Buddhists adopted the kalpa from Hinduism. In the Pali Canon, Shakyamuni describes a kalpa in this way. If a bird held a wisp of silk in its beak, and every 100 years it flew over a great mountain, brushing the top of the mountain with the silk, then a kalpa is how long it would take to wear down the mountain. I won't go into the different sizes and different cycles of kalpas here, but there are all kinds of subcategories of kalpas. At the other extreme, the Sanskrit word ksana, K-S-A-N-A, stands for the smallest possible amount of time that could be imagined. A 75th of a second, imperceptibly small. How do they know that it was a 75th of a second anyway? I don't know. Aksana reminds us of the teaching of impermanence. Even when we think we are staying still, the ksanas are ticking by, changing us with each tick, 75 of them in a second. There are said to be 900 arisings and ceasings within each ksana. Those are very small instants of time. Each moment is astonishing radiance. Without direction or corners. Discarding trifles. Scientists say that the universe began with the Big Bang 13.8 billion years ago. They also say, paradoxically, that this explosion, out of which space and time were born, lasted 1 trillionth of a second. How do they know it's not 2 trillionths? Maybe Tom White will tell us more about this later. The Earth formed 4.5 billion years ago. And that's when the Big Bang happened 13.8 billion years ago. Somehow it doesn't seem that long ago, now that we're talking about billions all the time within the budget of the country and so on. We're up to trillions. But the universe only began 13.8 billion, not even a trillion. It's a young universe. Well, anyway, life appeared on Earth 3.7 billion years ago. A mere 300,000 years ago, Homo sapiens appeared. That means that our species has been around for 1/10,000th part of the time of life on Earth. That's pretty amazing. When I think about the climate crisis, it calms me down a little to be reminded that in cosmological time, our species is a blink in the universe's eye. I don't mean that it makes me think, oh, it doesn't matter what happens to life on planet Earth, not at all. In the human time frame, it matters greatly. And as a human living in the human time frame, engaging with this issue is part of what it means to be fully alive and present. Even though time is immeasurable, we measure it. We have two kinds of measurements for time, the ones that are natural and the ones that human beings invented, though we have mostly forgotten this distinction. Human beings invented the hour, but the day was given to us by the universe. For most of human history, the sun was a sufficient timekeeper, marking both days and years for us, sunrise to sunset, solstice to solstice. For hunter-gatherers, or herders, or farmers, the hours of the day weren't important. It was enough to say, I'll meet you at the spring at midday. You didn't have to specify whether you meant 12:15 or 11:45. People worked with other rhythms of nature too, like the seasons and the solstices. What about the hour? The first mechanical clocks were invented in about 1300 in Italy. They were tower clocks without hands and had bells that told the time. They were powered by weights, and the time measurements were based on the rhythmic swinging of a pendulum, which provided repeated oscillations of identical duration. Each moment is astonishing radiance. Without direction and or corners. Discarding trifles. Even after we had clocks, most people didn't regulate their lives according to the hours on the clock. The first people to care about that were monastics, Benedictines in Europe and Zen monks in Asia, who established schedules according to the hours of the day at their monasteries. Time belonged to God or to the Dharma, and the measurement and marking of time was the monastery's job. No individual would have had a timepiece. All the monks had to do was follow the signals, which were sacred sounds in themselves. In a Benedictine monastery, the bells in the tower give the signal to go to the various offices of the day. The singing of psalms, chanting of prayers, from matins to vespers. And we know all about this from Tassajara. Time in the monastery belongs to everybody together. The marking of time itself is part of the spiritual practice. It's kind of a dance in harmony with instruments of variously textured resonances. The han, the fish drum, the big drum, the makugyo, the big and little bells, the umpan. This is all the music of time passing. How different from the hall buzzer in a high school telling you to rush to the next class. And one of the remarkable things about practicing at Tassajara is the opportunity to explore time in a deep way. In Zazen, you keep bringing yourself back to this body, this breath, this unmarked now. Back to the uncalibrated gurgling of the stream, the sound of time's flowing. On the face of it, this seems like the opposite of following the schedule, that most essential aspect of the practice. It seems like the opposite of regulating your life by clock time and aspiring never to be late. How is it that we dive into deep time while we're following this schedule so carefully? There's liberation in the schedule, because it's the schedule for everyone. I was freed from the job of keeping track of my time and meeting deadlines. The instruments were like the caller in a square dance. You just do the next thing when it's time to do it. You do-si-do, you duck for the oyster and dive for the clam. You throw your whole self into it, along with everyone else, becoming one organism. Just like the long line of black-robed beings walking up the hill in outdoor Keenhin like a centipede and curling back down, up the hill and down. The schedule enables the Sangha to exist. Without our bells, we might wander about in different directions, nap at different times, practice without any shared liturgy. There's another kind of practice in doing that, and that's valid too, but it's not Zen. Still, I want to mention the teacher Tony Packer, who is a Dharma heir of Philip Kaplow, founder of the Rochester Zen Center. She turned away from Zen and all its structures and founded the Springwater Center, where retreats had no forms, no schedules, no liturgy, no rituals. There was a meditation room, and you could come and go as you wished. This was another way of exploring time, being in it, watching and listening, feeling the rhythm of the daylight and darkness. The Industrial Revolution in the 18th century drastically changed our view of time. Time became money. Before that, a cobbler was paid for a pair of shoes he made in his own time. Farmers farmed according to the seasons, the time of day. But factory work was different. Owners were buying the workers' time. They still are. They were paid according to the hours on the clock. Almost all work is now paid for according to the hour. The amount people get paid per hour varies, but almost everyone gets paid by the hour or charges by the hour. And this puts a big stress on the hours of the day. It's harder to treat our time of day, harder to treat the time of our day as a flow. It's harder to lie in the hammock without measuring time, harder to do nothing. Time is for accomplishing things, producing things. We are all bewitched into thinking that time is all for doing, not for being. As social beings, we need clock time to connect us to each other so that we can do things together. Right now, we are together in this physical room and in this Zoom room because we have all agreed to meet at a certain hour. And those who are far away in different parts of the day or night can be here because our time zones are standardized around the world. But let's use these measurements and schedules as devices in order to live together more harmoniously. And let's remember that each moment is astonishing radiance.
Each moment is astonishing radiance.
Without direction or corners.
Discarding trifles.
So, wow, I cut so much from my talk, it was good and short. And I brought it, I printed it out, I didn't bring it on my laptop, so I can't tell you any of the things that I left out. This is a good practice for me. anyway, this gives us good time for discussion, which I want to have anyway. And I also want to do an experiment. So about time passing. And we can all do it, the people on Zoom and the people in the room. So, oh yeah. Okay. So we're gonna try to see what time passing looks like. So we're going to sit for 30 seconds. And while you're sitting, I want you to watch time pass. Notice each moment as it passes. Try to notice each ksana. See if you can catch them as they go by. We'll just do that for 30 seconds. Try really hard. OK, I'll ring a bell to start and a bell. You don't have to start watching, looking at them yet. But after I ring the bell, you have 30 seconds to catch those ksanas going by. Okay, that was the first part of the experiment. So now, let's take a deep breath. And now we're going to sit again. I'm not going to tell you how long it's going to be. It's going to be either shorter or longer than the last time. Not exactly the same. And this time, don't try to see each ksana. This time, stay as still as you can, as if time has stopped, as if it's just one big moment. Just rest in that one big moment. Okay, now, just out of curiosity, if you think the second time was longer than the first time, raise your hand. Now, if you think the second time was shorter than the first time, raise your hand. Well, an awful lot of you aren't voting. It wasn't the same, I'm telling you. You experienced it as the same. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's legitimate. Okay. You experienced it as the same time. Okay. Okay. Well, I don't know what this experiment proves. It's a playful experiment, but in fact, the second time was longer.
No.
Yes. And I think, I mean, 5 seconds longer. It was 35 seconds instead of 30 seconds. So it's only 5 seconds, but it's a good 15% or so, but whatever. So what I think is interesting is how the brain sort of tracks time. And when you're trying to have a lot of separate things happening in a short amount of time, it sort of stretches the time out a little bit, in a way. And maybe when you're just trying to stay still, then somehow it flows more smoothly. I don't know, that's one possible interpretation. But I'm interested in any reactions you had or responses to that experiment. Like, what about trying to watch time go by? I've tried to do that sometimes in retreats, and it's really a strange thing to try to do. What did you notice? Anybody have any comments on this? Joan.
Well, I noticed that words seem to have an influence on me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In the moment, mm-hmm. that big moment, then the rest part calmed mm-hmm. down, mm-hmm. felt like it was longer. That's
mm-hmm. mm-hmm. Yeah, I can understand that. Yeah, Norman.
Well, I didn't. I was sitting there, and there was this and this and this, but I didn't see any extra thing called time.
Yeah, yeah. I do know what you mean.
Time, where, what?
Yeah,
There didn't seem to be any. I mean, there was like things that were being experienced, but.
Like the sound, a sound or something?
The sound or the body, mm-hmm. the body, the breath, or whatever it was. But on top of that, I didn't see any, because I was trying. I was looking
mm-hmm.
at
yeah.
Like, where are they?
Yeah. It's a strange thing. They're invisible and inaudible. And they don't smell either.
No.
Yeah, Greg?
Is there
well, that is the point. Something, there's something, somehow.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Greg.
Yeah, that's right. I found that when I was looking for saunas, I became very aware of something that just seemed to not be changing at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it almost seemed like something was, as if time was frozen. When I was looking for the little saunas, I said, wait a minute, it's like this one present moment hovering there.
That's it. So when you were looking for the changes, you didn't find them.
Yeah. I mean, I could see that things were changing.
Yeah. Yeah, Cheryl.
I enjoy the flow of time, but just being in one moment much more than
Having
to look at everything happening.
Yeah.
And then everything, the same number of things happened. But it was easier.
Maybe somebody online has.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Norman. Oh, there's a whole bunch of hands online. Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm sorry, people online. You're not forgotten. I see you. Okay. Is that Maya? Hi. Speak up.
I just need to let people unmute themselves. Okay. I found that when I was counting the 75th seconds, I was breathing faster. And when I was in the one moment, I was calmer and breathing slower.
Yeah, you had to kind of run to keep up with them. It made you out of breath. Yeah. That's a natural response when you say it. Naomi.
Similar to Maya's, the first time I was doing something and so the time seemed faster. Mm-hmm. This time I was just being and it was more amplitude.
Yeah. There's a kind of opening up when you're not trying to do anything. Things expand, yeah. Martha.
Yes, I became focused on my beating heart.
Uh-huh.
I felt I was marking time by the beating heart.
Yeah, yeah.
And I really couldn't think of any other framework, you know, to have the experience. But because, you know, the beating heart became my experience.
Yeah. Was that in both of those times or just the first one?
Both of them. Uh-huh. Both of them, very similar, yeah.
Can you feel your heart beating without...
Yes.
Without feeling your pulse or anything?
Yeah, no, just being quiet and I can feel my heart beating. Yeah.
Well, that is our sort of natural
timekeeper,
yeah. But it's not keeping any particular kind of time, but it's happening in time and it's marking time, but it isn't telling us what time it is.
Right, yeah. Right.
Yeah. I want to explore that more later on about body time and how our bodies kind of keep time. Julie.
I close my eyes to do these exercises.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I remember that the breath that we would teach for people in pain and difficulty in medicine was present moment, only moment. That was just the breath, present moment, only moment.
With each breath.
Each breath.
Present moment, only moment.
And it being a really wonderful way to work through pain and suffering.
Yes, that's very healing, yeah.
That's pain.
That's one of Thich Nhat Hanh's ways of doing it too, isn't it?
Yeah.
Present moment, wonderful moment. Anyway, I know there's that one.
I like the only,
though. Yeah, only is great. That has a different emphasis. It's funny how just these little words are sometimes helpful, and then they sometimes get in the way. When I used to not be able to concentrate at all in Zazen, not be able to clear my mind, I would have all these things I would say to myself to keep myself focused, and I had all kinds of things I said that were kind of long sometimes. And I remember going to Linda Ruth Cutts and saying, well, I just can't focus and stay focused. So I say to myself, blah, 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 blah. I can't remember what it was. And she encouraged me to not have quite so many words. Vanna.
Hi there. Norman said, I could not find any time. I couldn't find a chopping that way. And I couldn't help but have a couple of distinct memories come to me in the past, working with time.
Oh.
And by the way, The very first time I heard Norman give a Dharma talk, it was on Uji.
Oh.
Yeah, it was really wonderful. But one of the memories was a Sistina I wrote in college, and one of the words I'd chosen my Sistina was time. And it has a homophone. It's helpful to use T-H-Y-M-E, here and
yes,
here.
Yes.
But this line just came to me. It's like, there's no time really, look clearly. And then another one, it relates a bit to what Julie said about the present moment, only moment, working with the emptiness of time.
Mm-hmm.
With Mahamudra, the pointing out way. And then how are you defining moment? You use the word moment.
Mm-hmm.
So is moment, is it chopped up or is it boundaryless?
Mm-hmm. Like
you find a beginning or end. So the practice was just noticing that this moment, the boundaryless moment, doesn't come from anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's already here.
Mm-hmm.
And this moment doesn't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It stays.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, never not this moment, but it's also this moment has never been before.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah, that's really great. That's really great. Because it's so, everything, it doesn't make sense. I mean, this moment, it's always this moment, but it's not always the same this moment, is it? I mean, so, and yet this moment contains everything. So how could it be over and turn into another moment? And I loved your first couplet there about, could you say that again?
There's no time, let's see, was this it? There's no time really, look clearly.
Look clearly, yeah, that's great. Well, that's kind of what people have been saying, Norman and others. No matter how clearly you look, you still, there's no time to look at. Kirsten.
Thank you. I just had a very brief comment about my experience. Which was the first experience that we had, I felt was really, well, I said to myself, oh my, and it gave me the feeling that I had to do something in a certain period of time, whatever it was I thought I had to do.
Mm-hmm.
But the second time I felt, I felt much more being rather than doing. And I fell into a very meditative state very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know how long I was going to have, but I was hoping it was going to be longer.
Mm-hmm.
And so those were, the first one for me was doing, and I have to do this thing quick.
Yeah, yeah.
And the second one was being.
Yeah.
So, okay, that's all I had to say.
That's very apropos, because that's really what the kind of the main difference between those two different short meditations, in a way. One of them was putting the emphasis on doing and the other on being. And doing isn't really what we want to be doing when we're meditating. We want to be being. Yeah. Also, what I think is extraordinary, and I wasn't emphasizing it just now, but I think we may maybe well just sit again for 30 seconds, is how long 30 seconds is, whether it's whatever you want to say about it, it's an immeasurable period of time, even though I say it's 30 seconds. And when you think that our whole life is made out of so many 30-second periods, but they're all blended together. But how much time there is? I mean, to say, you know, I don't have much time for you. I only have 15 minutes to talk. Well, that's a true thing that you might have to say to somebody, but in some other sense, 15 minutes, if you were sitting there for 15 minutes and just not trying to work hard at it, but just realizing that it was this expansive period of time, it's very huge. And it's great if we can get more practiced in entering that kind of time. Years ago when I was in therapy and I would be talking to the therapist and I would be all upset about something and say, oh no, but I there's only 5 minutes left and I haven't even talked about such and such. And she would say, it's all right. We have all the time in the world. And that was just so great, you know. I mean, I couldn't talk about the thing that I thought I needed to talk about, but we did have all the time in the world in those moments together. And we always can approach each other with that feeling, too. Well, let's do one more 30-second sitting. And just notice how long it is. And I'm not going to tell you to do anything in it. Just be grateful for it, maybe. Okay. Wasn't that a nice period of zazen we just had? So now I'd like to do breakout rooms and groups of three in this room. And before you go into groups, the suggestion is to talk about each person take about 5 minutes and talk about your relationship with clock time, with measured time, and with linear time, the kind of time that we count and measure, and anything that comes to you. Would you like to be able to free yourself more from this time? Do you feel constrained by it, by the demands of the clock? And how does your practice affect your relationship with time and measurements of time? So I guess the question could also be about how do you feel about measurements of time and our measurements of time? Oh my goodness.
How much time do we
have? I just realized something. Wait, before we go into the small group, I realized that I cut a paragraph out of my talk that I didn't mean to cut, and that was one of the things I really wanted to say, and I'm just going to tell you what it was about before we go into this next thing, which was that I wanted to really give thanks for the day. I was talking about these different lengths of time and natural periods of time and synthetic periods of time that we create. And now nature gives us the year and it gives us the day. Well, the day is such a gift that we never think about, that I don't think about. I take it for granted. Well, we've always had the day. Human beings have always had the day. And if you think about it, you know, everything that's ever lived on Earth, long before there was any word day, had the day. The Earth has been rotating on its axis all this time. And it keeps doing it, and it could be otherwise. We're so lucky that this planet rotates on its axis the way it does, because that's what our life depends on. And the moon doesn't rotate on its axis except once a year as it goes around, or once a month as it goes around the Earth. But for our purposes, it doesn't rotate on its axis. The sun, our nearest neighbor, Venus, rotates on its axis every 6,000 hours. So that's kind of a long day. I think that would be a little long, even though sometimes I wish there were more hours in the day. I think 6,000 would be too many for most of us. So it's kind of perfect that the Earth takes 24 hours. Isn't it amazing? It takes exactly 24 hours to go around. Of course, that's not really, it goes the other direction. We made up the 24-hour part, but it's a very good length of time. And so this is our everyday life is about the day, and everyday Zen has got a great word in it, because what a wonderful gift the day is, and I'm just so grateful to the universe for giving us a day and a planet that goes around on its axis, like our heartbeat going on and on. It just keeps doing it without wanting any thanks for it. So that was something I forgot to tell you. So anyway, that connects a little bit with my question for the small groups about getting in touch with natural cycles of time, or do you feel too connected to these human-made time measurements, and would you like to be able to find ways to connect more with natural cycles? Or anything that comes up that you want to share about your relationship with time and working with time and how you feel about it at this moment in your group. And 5 minutes for each person. So, Shefi, is that good? Can you put people into groups of three? And let's say 20 minutes for each group.